This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. This week we're without a sponsor, but if you wanted to sponsor us, then you can get in touch via our website at outofschool.net. How are you doing there, Bradley?
Doing great. Still recovering from a cold. I think I've been sick for 4 weeks now. Maybe a new record.
Doesn't get better quickly, does it? I guess
no.
That's one thing about getting old.
Well, I think that's part of having kids as well and working around kids. It seems like you're just always perpetually sick.
But that is how it goes. Yeah. Any news this week? Anything going on?
Evernote for Business launched today, and that looks very interesting.
Yeah, that happened just as I was getting involved in starting a very small-scale Evernote trial at school. I've been thinking about this quietly for a while. I guess we're kind of getting sufficiently far into our iPad deployment now that a couple of things are starting to happen. You know, we're starting to do more and more and more digital work. And the question has sort of arisen, well, how do we keep control of that? You know, if we've kind of gone past that line where the digital work is just kind of a small part of everything we do in the classroom to being a big part of everything we do in the classroom to potentially one day being all of what we do in the classroom, then how do we keep control of all that data? Where does it go? What's our system for that? And up till now, our system's basically been people filing it in their Gmail, which is obviously is neither scalable nor very flexible in the long term. So we kicked off an Evernote trial, kind of inspired by our recent episode with Bill Stites as well, just with two kids in one class, one of whom is my daughter, who managed to break her thumb a couple of weeks ago. So she has been doing all of her schoolwork on the iPad because it was her right hand she broke. And she's done everything, even stuff she would normally write, they've been doing digitally for her for the past couple of weeks. And that was kind of what prompted this question, was how do we control this if we start to do it for the whole class? So we're going to try Evernote, see how it goes.
I'd like the feature of being able to kind of push selected notebooks to every user. Of course, their kind of use case is, you know, human resources documents. But this could also be great in a classroom setting where you could, say, make available the syllabus and you know, any relevant documents ahead of time.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're, as I've mentioned in previous shows, we're using Basecamp for this at the moment. But one of the things that we've noticed over the past sort of maybe 18 months is that our staff are no longer content with the idea that you have to go to a certain computer or a certain place to do something. And one of the things we've run into a problem with Basecamp is that it's kind of stayed stubbornly a web-based thing. I mean, that's the whole 37 Signals shtick, if you like, is that they're all the web. But we're finding that using the iPad now and also phones, that people are not... it's not convenient to do it on the iPad, or it's actually in some cases not even possible. So with the new Basecamp redesign, for example, they disabled the ability to edit text documents on an iPad, for example. And teachers are not, they just don't want to hear that story anymore. You know, that's a product that ships broken. It's a product that doesn't work on an iPad in our school. So potentially I can see us, you know, with a unholy amount of effort probably on my part, transitioning from Basecamp into Evernote.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting. I'm looking forward to what I assume will be a blog post from you in a few weeks.
I've got something I wrote already for just internally, which is rather pauntily described as, what did I call it again? I've got it here. Identifying second order workflow problems in one-to-one situations. And really what that was about was just saying, look, I mean, we've talked about this on the show before, like the philosophy of IT at our school is allow a problem to arise, characterize the problem, and then solve it, rather than trying to imagine the problem ahead of time and imagine a fix for it, and then that fix is typically not exactly what people are looking for. So we've identified this problem, the idea that digital artifacts have to be stored in the medium term. And the medium term I'm kind of defining as 3 to 5 years. You know, we're not storing it for archive. This isn't the National Archives, right? But there are reasonably things that pupils may want to have from 1 year to the next, and we don't necessarily want those older things eating space on the device. So Evernote's starting to look like quite a good option for that.
Yeah, I really I've crossed the I guess the tipping point where I can no longer justify keeping my notebooks downloaded locally. I'm probably at about a gigabyte in size for my notebook at this point. And so I've selected a few notebooks that I always want to have access to, such as a travel notebook and things like that. But I've started storing so many PDFs in there. The majority of the time when I want to access my notebook, I do have a data connection. So I don't want to waste the space.
There's always that travel notebook, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Especially in it, since I have a Wi-Fi only iPad mini, that's especially important to keep offline as well. It's even more important on a Wi-Fi only device.
Definitely. Yeah. So Evernote Business just came out today. It was just announced today. And basically what it does is it's a new way of combining accounts for a business, so that the business owns certain notebooks and they don't belong to any one person. So the way we've put it together at school at the moment is that each user, pupil and staff have a premium account, so there are shared notebooks, but those shared notebooks always belong to the originating user. Whereas in a business account, there are certain notebooks that can belong to the business and not to any specific user. And when you bring a new user on board, say you hire somebody, you can send them specific important notebooks. You mentioned HR documents in a business setting. In school, we would typically have a lot of things to do with risk assessment, for example. Those are documents that people need to have access to quite freely. I think it's, what, $10 per user per month?
I think so.
That's the ballpark price. And you also get a fairly substantial upload limit. You get about 2 gigs, I believe, a month. 2 gigs to your personal notebooks and 2 gigs to your shared notebooks, the business notebooks as well. So it's a pretty generous upload limit as well. But I think the per note limit, which they actually just doubled to 100 megs, is still in force for business users as well. So that's an interesting development. Evernote seems to go from strength to strength.
I agree.
Okay, so let's get into what we're going to talk about today, which is a slightly different kind of show today. We're going to talk Christmas gift guide, what we think are the things that you might want to ask for or the things you might want to give if you're stuck for a gift for your technologically inclined educator in your life. So we've got a list here. We're going to talk some specific apps, some hardware, some accessories, and also some services, because services cost money these days. Not everything's free on the internet anymore, and there are various ways and means by which you can keep feeding the internet machine pennies until they give you things that you want. So Bradley, I'm going to let you kick off here. The first one on the apps list is yours.
Yeah, it's a remote access service called Log Me In, and they have a installation packages for the Mac and for Windows, and they have a free version, but they also have a paid version that has quite a few extra features. And then they have a client for iOS and I believe for Android. And this is pretty cool because you can, from your iPad or iPhone, remotely control your Mac or PC. Well, using this will prove that Apple was right in redeveloping their OS for touch, because it's, rather tricky. It's great in a pinch if you need to get a document or if you're, really just anything needed to say, hey, I need a Mac for this, or I need a Windows machine for this. It can be quite helpful. And it's fairly fast, even over cellular networking as well. They have a free version in the App Store, but also a paid version of $30. Adds some extra features like file sync. And then, again, there's free and paid versions of the service, but it's Log Me In.
Okay. I use an app called iTeleport for that same purpose. It was the first one I picked up off the App Store, a couple of years ago that worked well enough for me that I kept it. They've also got an app that you can install on your Mac, and somewhat bizarrely, it kind of connects through your Gmail account. So instead of making an account with them and having your machine report its IP, they do it through your Gmail account for some reason. I've never quite got to the bottom of why, but Next on the list, I don't know if you put this down or I put this down, but I think we're both using it, is Fantastical. I'll spell that F-A-N-T-A-S-T-I-C-A-L. This is an app which has been around on the Mac for, I want to say, maybe about a year.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. And has recently, in the past, I think, week maybe or two, come out with an iPhone version. Fantastical is basically a replacement calendar for Apple devices now, both iOS and OS X. And its big trick, if you like, it's a menu bar application on the Mac. It's a full app on iOS. But its big trick is a natural language appointment entry system. So you can just open up the app and type in, you know, lunch at 12 with Bradley, and it will show you as you type. It actually animates the text that you're typing into place in the calendar. So you can see that the appointment is created, and then it says lunch with Bradley, and that goes into the text of the appointment. And then you type at 12, and you can see the appointment shrinks from being an all-day appointment to being a 12 to 1 p.m. appointment, and so on. And you've been using this on your phone, Bradley?
I have. I bought it the mm-hmm. day it came out. I love the Mac version. I don't even have a calendar, or I guess iCal on my dock anymore. And it's just really no reason not to. It's super easy. It's super inexpensive. I think currently it's on sale for $2 for the iPhone. And then it uses your built-in calendar data. So if you've already got your iCloud calendars and your Google calendars and your Exchange calendars set up on your iPhone, it just reads that same database.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. Is it's very easy to get started because you don't have to re-import your calendars or anything like that. You can just go ahead and use the things that it already has on your device. Very cool app. And some of the animations on it are fantastic as well. There's a kind of a row of days, almost like a kind of strip of a calendar. And it has this incredible effect where in the center, there's like a magnifying glass. And the current day you're looking at, when you slide it under, it has a sort of almost an optical illusion effect of it being magnified. It's worth, in my opinion, it's worth buying the app just to play with that effect for a while, because it's very, very cute.
My dog is drinking water in the background. So if you hear that, apologies, I'm at home currently. So if you hear my dog drinking, in the background, apologies for that. But I do have dogs. I guess the listeners will know that now. Two pugs.
Life with dogs. All right. Next one is an app that I've loved for years and kind of recently fallen out of love with a little bit and fallen back in love with a little bit. And, oh, I guess it's complicated between me and OmniFocus right now. But you're still a big fan, Bradley.
I am. You know, it's a great solution. They provide their own syncing server. This would be a great kind of, you know, I'm trying to think of how you'd gift this if you wanted to gift this to somebody, but you could, you know, figure out what it would cost to buy all the apps, give them an iTunes gift card for that amount, but also maybe throw in David Allen's book, Getting Things Done. OmniFocus is kind of built on top of that. And really, they kind of worked hand in hand from what I remember with David Allen to build the app. There was a white paper that was really in depth. And so again, you could, you know, give somebody an iTunes gift card and then also that maybe a Kindle version of that book or just the actual hard copy of that book as well. But it works well. In some ways, I think it's maybe overkill for some of my needs, but it just would take so much effort to try to recreate it somewhere else that I just am lazy and still works.
Yeah, I think that the way I've always described OmniFocus to people is that if you want to do a very doctrinaire form of GTD, then OmniFocus is absolutely the app for you because it really supports all the kind of moving parts of that whole system. Whereas if you just want a to-do list, a simple list, then maybe the built-in reminders app is fine. But OmniFocus has been, this is pathetic, right? But I'm going to say it anyway. I have I played a tiny fractional role in the creation of OmniFocus back in the day. And I'll tell you what it was. It long sort of ancient history story, but this I'm going back to maybe 2006 possibly. I was mucking about with Omni Outliner and AppleScript, and one of the things I was trying to do was make an Omni Outliner file that I could script a little bit and you know, change the styles in the script based on whether it's had a certain word in it or something like that. And I posted all this stuff on, I think it was probably my live journal back then, or maybe an early version of a real blog that I had. But a guy called Ethan Schoonover, who at the time was a photographer in Hong Kong, took those scripts and created a thing. I don't know if he took the scripts or certainly was inspired by the scripts and created a thing called Kinkless GTD, which was an unbelievably complex set of Apple scripts that took my basically poorly implemented idea, and he turned it into like probably the first actual GTD system on the Mac, basically just by scripting OmniFocus, OmniOutliner at the time. And then the people at Omni saw that, and Ethan now actually works for Omni, and you know, the inspiration for that and time passed and so on, and eventually OmniFocus comes out. Anybody who's used OmniFocus will know that it has a strong heritage in OmniOutliner as well. So that was my small part in the creation of OmniFocus.
Yeah, and I do remember Kinkless.
Many, many years ago. Kinkless was great.
That's probably back, 2007, 2008? I'm trying to remember when OmniFocus came out. It was in beta for a long time. Maybe it was 2008. I don't remember.
Yeah. Kinkless was awesome. And I remember being at WWDC one year and being in an AppleScript session where somebody mentioned that Kinkless GTD was actually being used as a test suite for changes to AppleScript on OS X, because it was probably the most, maybe not the most, but certainly one of the most complex and elaborate sets of AppleScripts that had then been built for OS X. So yeah, OmniFocus is a lot more stable and reliable and an actual product than any of those lash-ups that we did back in the day. So yeah, OmniFocus, definitely. I guess you have to be a little careful how you gift a to-do list application, though. It could be interpreted as you're not organized enough.
It's kind of like buying your wife a vacuum cleaner for Christmas.
Yeah, that's got to be asked for, I think. Okay, next one up is yours as well, Bradley. Hazel.
Yeah.
Tell me about Hazel.
Hazel is, you know, there's not, everybody doesn't need Hazel. It's one of those apps, depending on your workflow, it can be kind of an overkill app, or it can kind of be a lifesaver. So basically, you know, Hazel in 3 to 4 sentences is you could, it's a little menu bar application, and you can say any PDF that includes these words, do this with it. And so, you know, let's say there's a PDF that, you know, has the title water bill in it. It could be automatically, you could, you know, maybe be on your desktop and it would automatically move it. So if you're trying to really move towards a paperless lifestyle, Hazel can help automate some of that. It's very, very widely regarded around the internet, and it works very well.
So you can basically build up rules that say if this file has a label, or if it has this in the title, or the date is this, or whatever, then do something with it?
Correct.
That's basically it, isn't it? I have played with Hazel in the past, but all I have ever kind of gotten around to doing with it is after every 30 days, delete my downloads folder and clear it out. Which is it's like the laziest possible thing, but why shouldn't we have the robots do that for us? Okay, next one is Printopia. Now, Printopia is kind of an interesting piece of software. I use it at school and have used it at school for, well, since AirPlay came to iOS. What it is it's a system preference pane for the Mac that will take whatever printers you have configured on your Mac, and it will essentially rebroadcast their presence on your network as AirPlay compatible printers, even if your printer's not AirPlay compatible. Sorry, I said AirPlay, I meant AirPrint. Even if you have a standard, we have a Xerox laser printer, which is Ethernet connected to our network and doesn't support AirPrint at all, predates that substantially. But by installing Printopia on our server and connecting the server to the printer, I can now provide printing services for any iOS device that comes on my network. Fantastic thing. Way, way better than trying to buy yourself an AirPrint-compatible device, because frankly, there aren't any AirPrint-compatible printers that are suitable for substantial work group use. So what is it, about $10, Bradley?
Yeah, I believe it's $20.
$20.
And it works well. And of course, keep in mind that, let's say, for example, you have some very tricky job accounting software that you use on each desktop machine to interface with the printers. It's not going to do that. It's basically going to support basic printing. But if your option is nothing at all or Printopia, Printopia is a great option. I have not seen a what they call a MFP multifunction printer that has AirPrint. I mean, I imagine that's going to be 2 to 3 years away before we see anything built in.
Yeah, Printopia actually has a couple of other tricks that may be of interest to listeners. One of which is, instead of actually printing the thing, it can turn it into PDF and put it in Dropbox. Or I believe it can do Evernote now as well. Those are some interesting options. I have not personally spent a lot of time with those, because I prefer to try and figure out ways to turn these things into PDFs or Evernote clips directly on the device. And we'll maybe mention Everclip later on. But Printopia can certainly do that if you're on the network. You know, if you spend your life on one network and you've got Printopia right there, then it's probably a pretty good option. Now, this one's mine. This is all mine. This is my favorite app on iOS by miles. And it is PDF Expert by Readle, who are known, I guess, perhaps more for Readle Docs, which is a kind of Google Docs type thing. But PDF Expert is, in my opinion, the best PDF app that I've ever used on any platform, anywhere, at any time. It's better than Preview on the Mac. Everything's better than Acrobat Reader, as you know. But PDF Expert basically is a full-service PDF app for iOS. And it's kind of the cornerstone of a couple of things that I do in school, one of which is... At the moment, because we've kind of come into the iOS world at the end of a whole series of courses that we used to teach, a lot of my resources are PDFs that were intended for printing originally. But nowadays, we distribute those by through iTunes U, generally. And I will quite often show those notes on the screen and have them on the screen as we work on the whiteboard or whatever. And PDF Expert is the way I deal with that. It's powerful in a number of ways. One is that you can connect to many cloud services. So it can connect to Dropbox, Box.net, Google Docs, SkyDrive, all of the different services you want, plus local web dev servers and so on. It can also, you can do a lot of PDF management in the app. So it essentially has its own file system inside the app, and you can create folders for your PDFs inside the app and so on and so on. It will also sync folders to Dropbox. So if you change things, it's not just I can connect to Dropbox and download something, but you can actually link certain Dropbox folders into your file structure and say PDF Expert. So it's got a lot of good organization features. Second thing that it does really well is PDF annotation, which is a really big deal. When, you know, we quite often will give it like a 200-page PDF, and that's course notes for the kids. So what I'll do is I'll have them open it in PDF Expert, and as we work through it, they can annotate, they can draw on it with pens, they can put sticky notes on it, they can put comments on it. And there's also a number of stamp tools as well. So you can do things like just with one tap, just stamp certain sections with a graphic, and they can all be stored inside the document as well. If you have PDF forms, PDF Expert will support all of that. And you can also do certain things like you can store your signature in PDF Expert and just stamp your signature onto PDF documents. And then once you're done with that, my typical workflow is that I will receive PDF assignments from kids. I will mark them by writing and typing on them with the tools. And then I'll send the children back a flattened copy of those annotations so they get the assignment back. But it's got all my annotations burned onto the top of it. And then I can also send it to Evernote, for example, from PDF Expert. Works great. I mean, I could go on and on about all the ways that I use PDF Expert. It's also got presentation modes for when you're connected to a projector and different things. It's just a really fantastic app. And the last thing I'll say about it is that it has very good navigation tools. If you want to, for example, navigate through that 200-page document, page by page by page on iOS can get pretty tiring quickly. So there's a thumbnail overview mode as well that you can jump through and so on. So highly recommended. It's a little more expensive. It's £6.99, which I think is the same price tier as £9.99 in the US. But worth every penny. Just go ahead and get it if you spend a lot of time with PDFs, as I do.
Yeah, I use PDF Pen, but that, I guess, Riadl, is that how you pronounce the company's name?
I have tended to call it Riadl, yeah, but I'm not sure.
They also make a great product called Scanner Pro that is $699 US, and that's a great mobile scanning solution. If you don't have, if you have a need to scan receipts or other things, Scanner Pro for the iPhone and the iPad is a gem of an app.
That's I absolutely depend on that app when I travel as well, just because of all the paper you accumulate. Just taking a shot of it, straightening it out, and then one thing I like with Scanner Pro is it will actually automatically upload your scans to, say, Evernote or Dropbox or wherever it is you want them to go as well, which is really nice. Okay, my last app is Pocket, which formerly known as Read It Later. I think we still have to say that. but they rebranded, redesigned as Pocket a while ago. And Pocket is essentially, I don't want to say it's an Instapaper clone, right? But Instapaper is the kind of canonical example of this, right? It's a Read It Later service for the web, which has an iOS app component. Pocket is free, so you don't even need to gift it. Just give the gift of knowledge and tell somebody about it. But the reason I like Pocket is because I found that I was just, you know, whenever I saw something I wanted to deal with later, I would shove it into Evernote in the brain tonight, Instapaper. And the problem was Instapaper is designed for reading things later, as the name sort of suggests. But I was finding myself pushing in videos into Instapaper. And I never really got through that. They would kind of clog up my queue and so on and so on. But Pocket actually handles video right in the app. So if you put a Vimeo link or a YouTube link or something where it can extract a sort of semi-standard, well-known player interface from the page, it will actually let you watch the video right in the app. And I found that to be really, really useful and very enjoyable.
Instapaper has since added some of those features where it has a thumbnail for a YouTube video. But it's still, you're right, it's still largely based around text. And the most of the things I'm saving are text. And so I've gone back and forth, but I just like the presentation of Instapaper better. And so I've continually stayed with it.
I think Instapaper does a slightly better job of extracting the article from the webpage. It's one thing I've noticed about Pocket occasionally is that it just didn't look like the article was necessarily complete. I think they're very aggressive in stripping things out of the article. And sometimes, you know, the style of mainstream publication on the web, shall we say, where there's part of the article and then there's a massive advert halfway through and then there's the rest of the article. Putting those massive adverts in the middle can sometimes break Pocket a little bit. So occasionally I find myself bouncing back out to Safari or going back to the original view and just checking, do I have everything here? Instapaper tends to do a slightly better job of that. So it's kind of, it's to your taste. They both work very well. So those are our apps, all favorites of ours. Let's talk hardware. What have you got at the top of the list, Bradley?
iPad mini. And well, I know, depending on your budget, you may not buy someone an iPad mini. If you are looking to buy, spend $329, that's a great present for someone. I actually surprised my wife with an iPad 2 last Christmas, and she really loves it. And, you know, not that we want to advocate taking on debt, but, you know, like here in the States, Best Buy will, you generally run deals around Christmas for free financing. So if you have a Best Buy card, which that's the main reason I keep that card, it's the card I've had since I was 18, is so let's say you want to buy a television, but you don't want to spend the money right away, they'll give you 18 months free financing, 2 years free financing. So that's an option. If you do maybe want to surprise your spouse or someone else, maybe just buy them an iPad on basically on free financing.
Good luck in finding one. This is the problem. We should probably have done this show, like, you know, the day after the iPad Mini shipped, if people wanted to get one for Christmas. One of the ancillary staff in the school was trying to buy. She was asking my advice. Should she get the iPad Mini for her children for Christmas, or should she get the full size iPad or whatever? And I said, no, the Mini's fine. Great iPad, does all the stuff you want. She said, well, where can I get one? I said, well, they're sort of on 3-week delivery on the Apple Store, and I bet you none of the stores have got them. But she is, shall we say, a determined type, and spent the morning phoning all the Apple Stores nearby, and eventually went to one in a shopping mall not too far away, and by her luck, got there just as the delivery truck arrived. So she was able to buy her regulation 2 iPad Minis, and then was able to go out the store and go back in the store and buy another 2. So she hit the Christmas jackpot for iPad Minis, and my apologies to everybody else in Scotland who's trying to buy one, but she seems to have got the entire supply for Christmas. So iPad Mini is going to be huge for Christmas. I'm absolutely certain of it.
You know, your comment kind of makes me think. It's helpful to get to know the folks in your local retail stores, whether it be an Apple Store, a Best Buy, or a, you know, another Apple reseller. The more you get to know them, when situations like this, you know, it can be handy. I know the folks at our Mac Authority very well, and so I can call them up and say, hey, this is Bradley. Do you guys have any minis? And they'll be straight up, hey, we think we're getting some tomorrow. Maybe you want to call right when we open, and we can, you know, hold you on for an hour. And so, you know, that's why you always want to be nice to people and, you know, be friendly and things like that.
Absolutely. Yep. The personal touch goes a long way in these situations, definitely. So, next thing. I think this is another one from you, Bradley. The Moleskine Evernote notebook.
That it is. This is on my Christmas list that I hope my wife will buy me. One of my goals this year is to start writing down more. In a recent blog post of mine, I talked about kind of the justification of apps and trying to pare down the number of apps and services I use. And one of the apps that is getting cut is Day One. And while Day One is an incredible application, I guess I'm worried long term of, you know, 20 years from now, where does that app go? You know, is it still around? And so I'm planning on, you know, kind of starting maybe to write down stuff. My son does something cool, start writing it down. And, you know, basically, this is a Moleskine notebook, but the pages are optimized for importing into Evernote. So in Evernote 5 for iOS, there's a kind of a document scanner, and it is optimized for the Moleskine notebook.
The pages have a sort of light grid on them, I believe, that helps the application orient the page on the camera.
Yes.
And there's also another trick they can do, which is they've got some stickers in the book. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you could say this is a travel, this is a home, you can paste that sticker, and when you scan it, it will go into a certain notebook. Now, they are a little bit more expensive than a traditional Moleskine. So I think retail, they're running $24.95 on Moleskine's website. Now, this won't help you for Christmas, but I have seen them on Amazon coming in January for a little bit cheaper, where a regular Moleskine is normally maybe $10. But the difference is these Moleskines with the Evernote branding come with a 3-month premium subscription code. And so it, you know, if you figure you're already paying for premium for Evernote anyways, which you should, this is kind of a way to, I guess, justify the cost of the, you know, the notebook.
And that'll just be added on to your existing lifespan, if you like.
Yeah, and
if you're already a subscriber, right?
Yeah, again, you know, I know this is a digital world and we're all trying to do things paperless, but sometimes it's nice to write things down. And so this is kind of the best of both worlds, where I can make it a point to write things down. My son does, or maybe he writes in the notebook and I scan it in. You know, my son brings home so much stuff from his Parents Day Out program that you know, I'm doing air quotes, that he makes, but in reality, I'm sure his teachers are making. And it was just becoming overwhelming. So we've just started, you know, keeping a couple of them and scanning them into Evernote. I've got a big Evernote notebook called Sawyer's Creation. Sawyer is my son's name. And things that he does that we like, that we don't necessarily want to keep, because let's be honest, he's going to make a ton of stuff over the next 20 years. And we just take pictures of them. And that way we can always reference them, but we don't have to keep them.
Yep, that's one way to stay sane. But it doesn't get the glitter out of your car seats, which is... I've got two girls, so...
Yeah, my cars are full of old French fries from McDonald's, and my son is obsessed with trains. And so we always find trains everywhere in our cars.
All right. Next thing, and this is definitely in the ballpark for a Christmas gift, is Apple TV. Apple TV... if Apple TV was a person, it would be a friend of the show, right? Put it that way. We've used them a lot in school. I've got one at home, and they're just an increasingly useful device. You know, I was having a conversation with somebody recently where we were talking about what does it mean to future-proof a computer system or a deployment of technology, and I made the point to this person I was talking to that. What we mean by future-proofing today is software upgradable. Not that the hardware, you know, it used to be that we would say future-proof means you can pull out the hard drive and put in a bigger hard drive or whatever. But it seems to me more and more today that what's happening is that the future is arriving as software for very genericized hardware, right? So we think about an iPad. It's a slate of glass. It has onboard storage, networking, processing power, touchscreen input, but the capabilities, the way the future arrives is through new apps for that device. And the Apple TV sort of taking that same approach on the TV, where we've already seen, you know, since the second generation and third generation Apple TV shipped, increasing numbers of channels appearing on it. So, you know, we had things like the Wall Street Journal 2012 election coverage in the US. Obviously, the big one was the iPad mini launch. Apple did the Apple Keynote channel, which is now a thing on the front of the Apple TV that you can just say, hey, let's just, Tim Cook's got his own TV channel now, let's just go and watch an Apple event and so on. And of course, AirPlay and its connection to things like iTunes Match, your purchases in the cloud and so on. So you now have access to your library of things that you've purchased from the iTunes store directly on your TV as well, without even having to involve your iOS device in that. And it's fascinating to me just how powerful that device has become in terms of content. And obviously with its connection to iOS devices over AirPlay, you can just see this going a very interesting place.
I agree. It's a great device at $99 or what is that? How much is it in pounds currently?
Well, it depends if you use the bank math or Apple math, but by Apple's mathematics, it's about the same number of pounds as dollars, even though if I go to the bank and ask for the same number of dollars, it's not going to work. I think it's £98 in the UK or something. I've seen it on Amazon for about £95, but yeah, it's in the ballpark.
Yeah, it's a great device. And also, don't forget, if you're buying it for someone, go ahead and include an HDMI cable, because that's the only input for it is HDMI. So you're ordering it from Amazon or... anywhere like that, just, you know, you can add one on for $5 to $6. So don't forget the cables.
Yep, and don't forget to tell them about the remote app for if they've got iOS devices, because that makes life a whole lot easier with Apple TV as well. Because you can then use your iPhone as a remote control for the Apple TV instead of having to use the built-in infrared remote, which works okay. But when it comes to typing in longer things using the iPhone keyboard rather than trying to type it in on the on-screen keyboard on the Apple TV is very much easier.
Yeah, I like the Apple remote. My son, when he was younger, would always want to put it in his mouth and actually broke one. I'll tell you what we do, and I got this from a trick from John Siracusa, is in the settings of the Apple TV, you can actually program another remote control to control it. And so I just, on our television remote control, is a universal remote, and so I simply just programmed one of the other inputs for it to control the Apple TV. So it's quite handy. I like the remote app for typing, but for just browsing things, frequently I would forget to my iPhone would be across the room, or then I would have to load up the app. So we just got our television remote set up to control it.
Yeah, and I think the newest Apple TV user interface as well is much more browsable than previous versions. You know, previous versions you'd have like, oh, here's all the TV shows you have, every episode in one big long scrolling list, you know. But now you have it sort of grouped a little bit more and so on. So it's definitely getting better with the five-way browsing. Except when you have to put in your Wi-Fi password.
That's true.
But then you've got to do that anyway before you can use the remote control, because that works over Wi-Fi. So you're definitely stuck doing that with infrared. Okay, next thing on the list, and this is one that I'm in love with, is the Kindle Paperwhite. Have you get one of these as well, Bradley?
I have not. I'm not a huge fan of reading. I like to read, but not enough to have a dedicated device solely to it.
Okay. So Kindle Paperwhite, my wife and I both had Kindles before the Paperwhite came out. I had what's now called the Kindle keyboard, the sort of dark gray third generation one with the hardware keyboard on it. And my wife had the one after that, which was the silverish Kindle, I suppose, the fourth generation Kindle. And I really wanted an upgrade, but had held off because the Kindle Touch looked like the future, but the first generation Kindle Touch was a bit clunky. It had the infrared touch sensor and so on, and a very deep bezel and things like that. So when the Kindle Paperwhite was announced, and then quite quickly afterwards became available in the UK, I ordered one for myself as an upgrade, and I secretly ordered one as a gift for my wife, which she was absolutely delighted with. And I can honestly say that for the money, which is £109 in the UK for the Wi-Fi model, I have rarely owned such a nicely built device and so functional. It's the lighting system is almost perfect. I say almost perfect because it has right down at the bottom edge of the screen where the lights are, the light can be a little uneven across maybe the first 2 or 3 centimeters of the height of the display. But once you get past that and honestly into the area where you actually read the book, the display lighting system is just absolutely wonderful. And it's a pleasure to use. The touch screen is responsive. It's the fastest Kindle I've ever used in terms of screen response, but also just its kind of overall performance. And, you know, for the price of it, I have rarely owned something as pleasant to use. It's truly fantastic.
We had a staff member recently that was going under some surgery, and we all kind of kicked in and bought her a new Kindle. We got her the $69 model. And, you know, for a person that loves to read and reads kind of long form, reads going to used bookstores all the time, I really think the Kindle beats an iPad all day long just because of the electronic ink. Especially, you know, there's a use case for having a Kindle and an iPad.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've had a Kindle. I've had three Kindles in my time. I made a rash decision. I had the second, what was that? The first white one with the round button. So I think that was the second generation Kindle, which was the first one that was available to the UK. I owned that, and then I sold it when I got my iPad, which I think was a mistake, really. And later on, went back and bought the Kindle keyboard, and then later the Paperwhite. And I rarely take my Kindle out of the house. If I'm traveling, then all of that content can go with me on the iPad, which is the beauty of the whole thing, is that I don't have to have my Kindle. I'm not locked into that because I can read it on my phone, I can read it on my iPad, and so on and so on. So my Kindle rarely goes with me on a trip unless it's a holiday, a genuine, I might actually sit on the sofa and relax holiday rather than a business trip. The rest of the time, you know, I can read on the plane with my iPad, and it's perfectly fine. But yeah, I would not say that having an iPad obsoletes the need for a hardware Kindle. If you're into reading, yeah. And the fact is as well, the Kindles are getting so cheap. I mean, $69 for the entry level. It seems to me, I did a presentation recently where I sort of sketched out the general cost of an Amazon Kindle from its launch in 2007, when the first Kindle was $399, if I remember right, all the way down to today, where we're now at $69. And it showed a very, very straightforward line, which just, you know, within a year to 18 months from now, looks like it's going to cross the zero line. And I can see a world in which, you know, if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, you get a free Kindle. You buy your first electronic book, you get a free Kindle, you know. Because Kindles, at their heart, are tiny little, beautifully made vending machines for Amazon books. And more power to them for that. That's not a secret about Amazon's business model. That's how they do business. And they're definitely serving their readers' needs very, very well with that. And what can I say? I love my Kindle Paperwhite.
The next two kind of go together. It looks like we've got a Doxy 1, the Fujitsu ScanSnap, and the Canon P150. These are kind of, you know, hardware scanners. We've talked a lot about some software-based scanners. And the Doxy 1's probably more on the low end there, and we'll have some links to some of these things in the show notes, where the Doxy 1 is kind of like a standalone scanner. And if you don't have a ton to do, maybe you do a, you know, couple documents a week, that may suit your needs. But if you're, you know, a heavy, you know, got to scan everything, I get a ton of mail, scan it all, the Fujitsu ScanSnap or the Canon P150 will probably better suit your needs.
You can take my Canon P150 when you pry it out of my cold, dead hands. That's the one I put on the list, was the P150. I've had one of those for about 6 months now, and it is absolutely one of the best things I have ever owned. I think I paid about £230 for it. And the beauty of the P150 is that, I don't know if you remember a printer Apple made years ago called the StyleWriter 2200.
I do not.
Which was, it was a portable, it was in the time of the PowerBook 1400 line of portables, and it was a portable printer. So the whole thing, it could open out, two panels would open off the top to make it a paper hopper, and then the paper would run through and out the front edge of the printer. And the Canon P150 is almost a throwback to that design, because it comes as a small rectangular box, about the width of a an Apple keyboard, let's say a Bluetooth keyboard, a couple of inches high and maybe 4 inches deep. But if you press a button on the top, the paper hopper basically folds off the top, and then you can pull up some ears and some paper guides and stack your documents to scan in. And it folds down, and it folds down so small that it actually has a carrying case that you can get for it as well, which I have and I use quite a lot. My only tip with that carrying case is don't try and take this through an airport in hand luggage, because they have no idea what it is, and you're going to spend 10 minutes demonstrating it for them before they let you take it on a plane. Are you a ScanSnap user, Bradley?
Well, I'm not. If I was, I would buy a ScanSnap. We've got a Konica Minolta multifunction printer at work that has really suited my needs up to this point. I have put a ScanSnap in the cart a few times and just can't pull the trigger on it. But our scanner does scan to email, and I have taken apart complete conference notebooks and thrown it at that printer, and it scanned it right to my email, and then I've been able to import it to Evernote. In fact, I should probably add my Evernote email address into the scanner. That would save me a step.
Yeah, that would. That's a next-level ninja trick. The ScanSnaps are interesting because they tend to be kind of bigger, more desktop devices, about the size of a small printer. The P150 is very much a portable device. And one of the nice things about the 150 is, I don't know if there are ScanSnaps that can do this. I'm sure there's probably one, but the P150 can be completely bus powered from your laptop. So you don't need to take any power adapter with you. It will scan faster if you plug it into the mains, but if you don't and you just bus power it, it will work perfectly well. It'll just scan slightly more slowly. And that's been quite useful on the road as well. Gotta love the scanners.
Yes.
Next thing I've put on the list, and I am almost ashamed to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway, a Bluetooth headset. Yeah. I don't want to be that guy about Bluetooth headsets, but I have become a convert. And the one I've put down on the list is the Bose Series 2 Bluetooth headset, which is, I paid about £120. And I paid £120 after having bought a cheaper one, a Jawbone, I think it was, and been completely dissatisfied with it from the second I put it on. I sent it straight back to Amazon and said, well, okay, what's a really good one? And this one came up as the sort of higher end of Bluetooth headsets. And I'm absolutely in love with it. It goes everywhere with me. And I use it for two things, basically. I use it for making calls, obviously. But I also use it as a headphone, which seems like a weird thing to say, but I listen to a lot of podcasts when I drive and when I walk around and so on, rather than music. So obviously, you know, if you want a real stereo effect, a single-ear Bluetooth headset is not going to do it for you. But I've never liked that feeling with you get within your headphones where you're kind of cut off from the world. I always want to hear what's going on around me. And using a Bluetooth headset and listening to a podcast that way, I find it very comfortable. And also, when I'm in the car, I can listen to something in one ear and have another ear open for A, the road, and B, the children rioting in the back as well. And another nice feature of the Bose headset, it's shaped for either ear. So you buy either a right-hand one or a left-hand one, depending which way you want to wear it. I've got a right-hand one. The other thing it does is it supports multi-point Bluetooth pairing. And that means that you can actually pair the device with multiple, say you can pair it with your iPad and with your iPhone and with your Mac. And when you turn it on, you'll hear a series of beeps as it pairs to one device after another, and you can just play to the headset from either device that it's connected to at the time. So that's something I've kind of got. I guess as you get into your 30s, you care less about what people think of you and more about your own personal convenience. And it certainly is very, very convenient for many uses. And if people are going to laugh at me for wearing a Bluetooth headset, so what, you know? Just going to have to live with that, I guess.
I've experimented with Bluetooth headsets for running. I bought a handful of them, but it seems I've never found one that would fit right, especially for running. Again, you know, it's one thing to have one for driving and walking, but for running, it needs to have a specific fit. And so I've bought two or three and ended up selling them. And I've always just gone back to, at this point, the AirPods from Apple, which is our next item. And I've been happy with those. I like the volume switch. It seems to work well. I just happen to wonder, are we ever going to see something from Apple that's wireless?
That would be nice. It certainly would. I kind of mourn the short life of the Apple Bluetooth headset, because I think that one of the things that I have found with the Bose headset is that it is, even though it's audio streaming quality is very, very good. Like the sound from the music player or the podcast player is really, really first class. It just sounds like a wired headphone. What I have noticed is that the connection back from the microphone is not as good. So my recognition rate with Siri, for example, is much lower with the headset than it is with the built-in microphone on the phone. So I kind of wish Apple would get back into this game a little bit and build a Bluetooth headset that has the requisite high quality, because I'm assuming that what's happening there is that the headset, the Bluetooth connection, is reducing the sample rate of the audio sufficiently far that Siri's having a harder time recognizing the words. So maybe if Apple could get back into that game and give us something that we could talk freely to Siri over a headset, that would be pretty cool. I also, like you, have been using the AirPods, and the previous Apple headphones never really worked for me. I used them, but I always had to put, those sort of foam covers that you get. I had to put those on to make them kind of stay in my ears. But I've been able to use the AirPods without any kind of covering. I just use them out of the box, and they work great for me.
I've been very happy with them so far. I love the clickiness of the volume button. I tried to put in the old headphones the other day and just didn't like them. Just really, Apple did a nice job on them.
Yeah. The other thing I've appreciated recently is that the microphone and the volume control is actually a lot bigger than it is in older headsets. And in the Scottish winter, when we're wearing gloves and so on, it's a lot easier to grab and a lot easier to manipulate than the smaller microphones were in the past as well.
That gave me an idea for something to lead off our next section, which is accessories. This can be technology accessories specifically for an iPhone or an iPad, but something I bought last Christmas, which I have lost for this Christmas, but smartphone compatible gloves or mittens. It is very, very handy. And a lot of people say, well, just leave your iPhone in your pocket. Well, this is also helpful at an ATM or at a gas station that's a touchscreen base. You don't have to take your gloves off. Mm-hmm. And so you can generally, you can find them at most stores now. They'll on the index finger, they'll have a different kind of coating that will allow your touch, I guess, to bleed through.
Yeah, and now I have a pair of those from the iPhone era before the iPad came out, and they're almost worn through at the tip, so I should probably replace them. But they are North Face E-tip gloves, which are made of a kind of nylon-y material, but they've also got ones out now that are made of fleece and have the Gore-Tex Windstopper in them as well. I saw them when I was on holiday recently, and they look pretty cool. So they might be my next glove upgrade. But the only problem with the E-tip gloves is that they don't have coating on every finger. They only have it on the thumb and the index finger. So if you want to type two-handed on your iPad, you're going to be out of luck with that one, unfortunately. Okay, next things we've got are the smart cover. Are you thinking iPad mini, Bradley, or full size?
I think both. I'm a fan of both of them. I'm not a fan of the smart case. I just am not a fan of that. And they've not recreated that for the iPad so far. But I think the smart cover for the full size iPad is better, but I certainly still like it on the iPad mini as well. So, you know, one of those, it's a perfect accessory to give to somebody. If you know they're getting you're giving your wife an iPad mini for Christmas or an iPad for Christmas, and you know, her parents are asking for gift ideas, you know, a smart cover in her favorite color is a perfect accessory.
Absolutely. I recently picked up a new case for my iPad mini. It started off life in something I got for £4 from Amazon because it was the only iPad mini size thing that was available. But I recently picked up the Tucano Cornice iPad mini case, which is a much, much nicer thing. It is made of, I don't know if it's real leather or fake leather, but if it's fake leather, it's a very convincing fake leather. It's, if you imagine the original iPad case, so it has a frame around the case, it has a back, and it's basically, the seams are stitched together. It has a little flap that wraps around the left edge of the iPad and tucks in to keep it in the case. And then the cover is a three-piece smart cover style roll-up affair. And that's an absolute delight to use. It just feels great in the hand. It has magnets in the case. My only complaint is that I've found so far that the placement of the sleep and wake magnets in the cover is not quite precise enough. So I've actually had to disable that feature a little bit. But perhaps maybe once the leather wears in a little bit, the magnets will align a little bit better for the screen. But it makes a very, very solid typing stand for the iPad mini, which I find very important. And I found that has helped me to type a little bit better on the device as well. The previous case I had a kind of vertical stand up to it, and that wasn't quite so useful. But that's, I picked that up at the airport, actually. It wasn't something I researched and over again.
That's also the case for waiting a month or two and, you know, to buy your iPad mini and let the cases come out. Generally, when you buy a device on day one, you are limited on cases and they will be expensive because that's all that's out there. It's simple supply and demand.
Absolutely. What's next?
Well, this isn't really an item, or this is more of a link than anything. It's the Tools and Toys Christmas Catalog. Toolsandtoys.net is a site that is originally created by Sean Blanc at seanblanc.net. And a few months ago, Stephen Hackett, who's a friend of the show at 512pixels.net, came along and started working with Sean as well. And it's basically a Tools and Toys is a place to find, you know, gear for, you know, work and play is what they call it. And they've kind of put together a Christmas catalog, and it'll have some of the items we talked about here along with some different ones. But it's a great website to check out, and it's one of those that two or three times a week I'll check in and see what's new. And they kind of pick the best of what's come out around the world.
Awesome. The next thing is one I'm probably going to buy my wife for Christmas. And this is to solve a household problem that we've had for a while, which is the Belkin Wemo Wi-Fi controllable electric socket. And this is something that you plug into your wall and then you plug whatever device into this item. And the Wemo talks to your Wi-Fi and is then controllable from a smartphone application. Well, the reason that I'm buying it for my wife is because my wife likes to use hair straighteners, both on her and on the children. And of course, once you're doing little girls' hair, then they run away and you forget to turn off the hair straighteners, which then leads to things getting singed and potentially house fires and all kinds of things you don't want to happen at Christmas. So I thought I would get this for her, because what it would let her do is, if she ever thinks she has accidentally left her hair straighteners on, she could just pull open her iPhone, go into the app and just turn that off from wherever she is. There are, of course, many, many other applications for this. This isn't the only possible use for it. There's two versions of it. There's one that's just a plug, and there's one that's a plug, but it also has a motion sensor along with it as well, and that can be used to activate certain activities with the socket as well.
I've looked at buying this a handful of times. If you live in the States and live near a Costco and are a member of a Costco, you can actually buy a 2-pack that's only $80. And so on Amazon, you know, you can find it on sale for $45, but generally it'll run you about $50. So it's a pretty decent deal. And I really want one. I want the promise of it, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to tinker with it. And what'll frustrate me is if it like doesn't work sometimes. So let's say it works like 9 out of 10 times, and then it doesn't work that one time, which I read on the reviews on Amazon where one guy said that he had to reboot it every couple of days. And I would get so frustrated with it if that happened. I would just be so mad at myself. But, you know, I probably will end up buying one at some point because, again, it could be he may have had terrible, you know, wireless. He may have had bad home wiring. It could have been a lot of various circumstances. Mm. But, you know, I want one right now for our Christmas tree. That would be great to turn your Christmas tree on and off. And if you combine it with the website, If This Then That, which it's ifttt.com, you can even run schedules. So you can even say, okay, when I make a phone call, turn on my lights, you know, all kinds of stuff. So I guess long-term, we're still trying to sell our house, and I would love long-term to build a house that had all of this stuff built in from one company where it kind of had some of the electrical outlets, the heating and air, cameras, door locks, all that kind of built into one. But you just kind of can't beat the price of the Belkin. You know, $50 for a single outlet.
Yeah, it feels like the start of something with these devices. There's also, Philips just brought a thing where you can get 3 Wi-Fi enabled light bulbs that you can control with your smartphone as well. And you can take the colors off of photographs you've taken with your phone and then turn your home into those colors and so on. And it feels like people are starting to kind of dabble around the edges of these things. And I guess time will tell whether these are the sort of 21st century's equivalent of the internet fridge, or whether they actually genuinely turn out to be useful. But I'm betting that they probably genuinely turn out to be useful over the long term once people figure out what to do with them.
Next up on the list is spare lightning cables. So if you've got a loved one that has recently bought an iPhone 5 or an iPad mini or an iPad 4, it's tough because we all, I'm sure you were like us, that we had about 10 sync cables hanging around the house. We had, it seemed like in every room we had a AC adapter and a 30-pin dock or a 30-pin USB cable. And so when I bought my wife and I an iPhone 5, I ordered a couple extra cables, and it's really nice to have those, especially if you travel, or we have some downstairs and we have some upstairs. And so at $19, it's a good stocking stuffer.
Yeah, and I just saw on Twitter today that somebody mentioned that the first third-party lightning cables might be shipping this month as well. I forget who it was from, but I'm guessing Belkin. So that may be another option as well.
Next up is the AlloClip for the iPhone 5 is how you pronounce it. And we'll have a link to the tools and toys mention of this. It's basically some add-on lenses for your iPhone. So you can do a wide-angle lens or, a fish angle. So if you're really into photography or if you have a loved one that's into photography, especially for Instagram, this is a great gift idea.
Yeah, I know John Gruber is a big fan of the AlloClip, and one of the things he mentioned about it on the talk show a while back was that when you put an iPhone into video mode, the angle of view of the camera is reduced, but if you pop on the wide-angle AlloClip, you suddenly are back to being able to video quite a wide angle. So that's another application for that as well.
This
one's yours, I think, so I'll let you take it.
It's the electronic book Paperless by David Sparks. David Sparks writes MacSparky.com and has really become a pretty well-known author among, I guess, the tech scene. And his book Paperless is an iBook, and he also sells it as a PDF on his website. But I really recommend the iBook because it was built with iBooks Author, and so it has all the videos built in. So it's actually a large file. I think the book is about a gigabyte. But so let's say you have got a coworker, you got a loved one that wants to go paperless but just doesn't know how. This is the book for them. I'm actually pretty much paperless, but I still bought the book and still loved it. It has a lot of screencasts about Hazel, about, I think he talks about scanners, how to name files, how to use files, you know, use services to sync files everywhere. It's just a great book. So again, you can find that at MacSparky.com, but I highly recommend the iBooks version, but that's Paperless by David Sparks.
Yeah. And it's a great example of an iBooks author title as well. Really, really nice example. Next one's mine. This is, I'm not a big stylus guy, but I use it for certain applications. And the first stylus I got was called the Adonit Jot Pro stylus, which is a really nice stylus if you like a very, very fine tip. It has a sort of plastic disc on the end of a very fine metal tip. But what I found was that was quite fragile, and I ended up breaking that one, unfortunately. So the Wacom one is the sort of next best, if you like. It is of the kind of slightly fat, rubbery tip style of stylus, but I find it's a very solid stick in the hand, and the sort of friction on the tip is very comfortable to use on the iPad screen. So the Wacom Bamboo stylus is the one that we're talking about here, and the thing I like about it is that the tips are replaceable. So for about, I think, maybe £4 or something, I was able to pick up a bag of three replacement tips, and I've been fairly liberal in replacing them because this is how good it is that I actually wore out the first tip, and it started to become less comfortable to use. So I replaced it with a new tip, and it was back to its usual kind of gliding feel, which was quite nice. So that's my preferred stylus. And the next thing I wanted to mention was battery packs, external battery packs for your iOS devices. Now, I don't know if you've ever used a Mophie juice pack or one of these kind of battery cases, Bradley, but I have decided to swear off those forever now, mainly just because the shape of the iPhone changes every couple of years now, and I prefer to have something that isn't necessarily tied to fitting onto a particular device. Are you a battery guy?
I'm not. We had some. We kind of used them. Our church is very involved with overseas missions, and so we actually bought some of the mono-price battery packs a few years back. Now, they weren't. It wasn't a case. It was just something you basically stuck into the bottom of the iPhone, and they would use that to basically charge on the go. And they worked well. They were cheap. I think they were $8 a piece, and they eventually broke. But I'm with you. If you need one of these, you know, I'm just not a fan of the ones that are built into the cases, because again, they're very expensive, and as soon as a new phone comes out, it's going to be obsolete. So if you must have one of these, try to find one that's basically not built into a case. Try to find something that's, you know, yeah, maybe an external USB powered of some sort.
Yeah, I think I would recommend a case based battery if you find that you literally every day of your life need a juice up on your battery. You know, and that might be true if you, for example, live or work somewhere that's got a very weak phone signal, because then your phone will be running its cellular radio at a higher power to try and get a signal all the time. So if that's true, then yeah, a case makes total sense for you. But for travel and kind of things like that, I've now gone over entirely to using HyperMax battery packs. So I've got two. I've got the, if I remember right, I've got the Mini and the Micro, which are two different sizes. They come in several different sizes. I think there's maybe five in the range. And they range from being one, which is about the same size as an iPhone battery. It'll give you one recharge of an iPhone, which is a very, very small one. The one I've got will do, the smaller one will do two iPhones or one iPad mini or iPad 2. There is nothing in the world that can charge an iPad 3 from battery, just because the capacity of that battery is so massive. I think my biggest battery pack, which will do an iPhone six times, roughly 5.5 times, will do about half of my iPad 3. So don't forget to charge your iPad 3 or 4 overnight, because not much is going to come to your aid there. And that's one thing that's actually nice about the iPad mini, is that it's easier to keep alive from a battery pack because it has a smaller capacity battery. But yeah, the HyperMac batteries, they charge over USB. They have a mini and a full-size USB plug on them, and they also have they come with a special USB to DC cable that you can charge them straight from a USB plug, or just plug them into an iPad or an iPhone charger and leave them overnight. And I've been using these for at least a year now on both of them, and they've been perfect. You know, just remember to charge them, keep them in my bag, and I can leave them in my bag for several weeks and then just plug something into them and they will go ahead and charge it no problem. So I'm really, really pleased with the HyperMac batteries. I think the last one in this list is mine as well, Bradley. This is the InCase Origami Workstation, which is a very cheap product, actually. Low priced. It doesn't feel cheap when you use it. But what it is, it's basically a stand case for an Apple Bluetooth keyboard. So it's one piece, a sort of squarish piece of plastic. Soft to the touch, but fairly firm. And inside it, there is a plastic bracket into which you can clip the rounded back edge of an Apple Bluetooth keyboard. And the whole thing is sized exactly for the Bluetooth keyboard. And then the case will fold closed on top of the keyboard, and two little Velcro tabs will roll under the front edge of your keyboard and keep the case closed. Now, when you open those tabs back up, fold the case back out, you can fold in what are now the faraway corners of the case to make a little triangular stand for your iPad. So this is a way that you can use a Bluetooth keyboard with an iPad and just stand the iPad against this little triangular rest and type away. And it's very, very solid. It's not great for using on your lap. It prefers to have a firm surface to put it on. But if you're going on a train, if you're going on a flight, it's a great way to kind of turn your iPad into a sort of mini laptop for extended typing sessions. I think in the UK it's only about £20 or £24. It's not an expensive thing. Obviously, you need an Apple Bluetooth keyboard to go in it, which is puts the whole package up to a slightly more expensive price. But in general, the device itself is not too expensive, and it folds very thin, and it's very light in your bag. And really recommend that. I've been using it for a couple of years now, and it's held together very, very well. So those are our accessory choices. And just real quick, let's run through some of the services that we mentioned before, because obviously a lot of services now, we've mentioned Evernote Premium a couple of times already. That's one service that we like to pay for. We think it's really provides a lot of value. And now you can gift this, Bradley, right? I think you put this on the list. So
yeah, you can gift it, and they've also got a bundle. Because, you know, that's the thing about this kind of digital world is it's harder to kind of give somebody, let's say, a Kindle book or something like that. Well, Evernote has a pretty cool little package on their website where you can buy, and I believe it's, you know, maybe $55 instead of the normal $45 for the year, but it includes an Evernote t-shirt and a gift code. So you kind of have something to still give to somebody, but then they also get the benefit of the subscription as well.
That's a nice touch, because quite often for the virtual person in your life, you don't have anything to give them on Christmas Day. You know, all I tend to get is little bits of paper printed out an inkjet printer from Amazon, and I'm very grateful for all of them. Don't get me wrong, but it doesn't quite have the same ceremony to it as unwrapping a real thing.
Well, that's one of the nice things that Amazon has, is they kind of have a gift this section on Kindle where you can say deliver this on Christmas morning. And so, you know, I know I got a few presents from my wife last year on Christmas morning just by opening my phone and checking my email, because she had gifted me some books.
That only works in America, unfortunately. So just for any international people who may be listening, that's still a frustration for UK and international Kindle users, is that there's still no gifting mechanism. And I remember complaining about this last Christmas as well. And this Christmas, I'm pretty sure we still don't have it.
I don't understand what would be the holdup there?
Lawyers. It's always lawyers.
Well, that's frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a little bit, you know. But the weird thing about the UK Amazon site is that they will let you put a Kindle book on your wish list, but nobody can buy it for you. It's like, not so good. Amazon, get your act together, please.
Well, no, I don't think even in the States on the iBook store that you can have the same gifting mechanism where you can set a delivery date. That's the secret sauce of this, is because you can go ahead and buy it and it just shows up that day.
Yeah, you don't have to sort of excuse yourself from the room at 8 in the morning and go and hit Amazon. So, yeah. A couple of gift cards we're going to mention as well, just Kindle gift cards and iTunes gift cards. If you're sending these across international borders, don't forget that in large part these are not transferable between countries. I've had a few folks in the US very generously send me iTunes gifts from the US iTunes store, and I simply can't use them because I don't have a US iTunes account. And it's become increasingly difficult to move your device or your Mac between two international stores. There's now some limits in place that make it difficult for you to do that. So if you are going to do that kind of thing, the best thing to do is typically to figure out how to ship them an actual gift card, like a plastic gift card with a code on it, from the country that you're sending it to. It's just worth bearing that in mind.
Next on the list is app.net. And this is, app.net is kind of a Twitter-like service that is paid. It's a $36 a year membership. And I'm not even sure they have a gifting option at this point. But again, it's something nice that you go in there. Maybe if you got a coworker that's a little frustrated with Twitter, this may be something you could buy them.
And the last two things we have on the list is your preferred and my preferred online backup service. For you, Dropbox. CrashPlan. And for me, Backblaze. I've been using Backblaze for a while, and CrashPlan is one that people like as well. I think my initial Backblaze backup took about 45 to 50 days, possibly. It was quite a large backup, but it is now done. So my Mac is continually protected by constant backup to the cloud, and if I ever need to, I can either have them ship me a hard drive, or I can just download when I get an internet connection again and just restore my machine from that.
Both services are great. Kind of the main difference is from what I've read, is that, you know, the great thing about Backblaze is it doesn't use Java, where CrashPlan does, but CrashPlan, I think, has a few more kind of bells and whistles inside the app. Both are great. This CrashPlan and Backblaze are perfect for your non-tech friends. So maybe your in-laws, and you constantly are telling them, hey, you need to back up your Mac. They've got all these pictures on there, but they're never going to back them up. You know, you can give them a Time Machine drive, but let's say it's a laptop, they're just never going to plug it in. Buy them CrashPlan. It'll be great. In the future, if they, you know, the computer's stolen or if the hard drive crashes, it'll give them a peace of mind, and it will make your life much easier as well when it comes to rebuilding their digital life.
Definitely. A little bit of belt and braces security there. Last one we've got on the list is Dropbox Premium, or various sizes of increased Dropbox capacity. I have not gifted anybody Dropbox so far. I have participated in various of the referral schemes that help people to get a little more storage, but I have not gifted Dropbox to anybody, but that's possible.
Yeah, you know, Dropbox, it's one of those things that's a kind of a poor man's backup. So, you know, let's say you've got a photographer in your life, and you can maybe gift them the 200 gigabyte plan, or the 100 gigabyte plan as a kind of an easy way to back up and share their files to their clients.
Yeah, Dropbox is, I got to be honest with you, I'm finding Dropbox a little, feeling a little bit like legacy now. The more and more we move over to iOS, Dropbox seems to be having a hard time getting their workflow right on iOS. So, I mean, I still depend on it absolutely between my two Macs, but it's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting couple of years for Dropbox, I think, as to whether it survives and flourishes or whether it kind of becomes overtaken by various events and other services and slightly more built-in services as well.
Well, because let's say you've got someone looking at Evernote versus Dropbox, and if, you know, Dropbox is great and you can put stuff in there and view it, but you can't really edit anything within the Dropbox application. You have to get a text editing application to edit your text. And with an Evernote, you can kind of, you know, do it all right there within the app. And while, you know, getting a Dropbox-based text editor, you know, seems like nothing to me and you, for your average, you know, non-tech nerd, you know, that's a big step.
Definitely is. So I guess that's our Christmas list. If you're trying to buy an iPad Mini, I wish you all the best in finding one. The guy who sold me my iPad Mini case at the airport, he was actually shocked that I had been able to get an iPad Mini. He said that the phrase he used was they were like gold dust whenever they got them into the airport shop. Now, I guess the airport shop doesn't get very many compared to an Apple store. I would certainly recommend if you want to try your Apple store first and then try some other places as well.
And make sure you listen next week. We've got our very first contest announcement in conjunction with one of our sponsors. We've got a great contest next week. And so you'll definitely want to listen. You have a chance to win a couple apps and an iTunes gift card as well.
Awesome. So I guess that's the show. And we're heads down for Christmas. The rundown is on.
Yeah.
Christmas plays are happening in schools all over the world, I guess.
We had a ballet performance this morning. And so, of course, that was packed out with parents as well. We've got our Christmas program this Thursday night that I have to run keynote for, as always.
Okay. Well, good luck for that. I'm presenting on Thursday night about our new exam system in Scotland, which, if I can get through that, I'll be a very, very happy man. And that will be my Christmas just about begun.
Well, outofschool.net is the website. I'm Bradley Chambers on Twitter, and chambersdaily.com is my blog.
Spears.org for me, where I just recently posted a new article about the kind of apps I'm using on my iPad Mini just now, and Fraser Spears on Twitter. I'm also starting to muck about with Google Plus a bit more as well, so if you search me up in Google Plus, we can maybe figure out what that's for together, but I'm interested in that service.
And if you're an iTunes user, we always appreciate a review in iTunes. Those definitely help new people find out about the show. So if you're next time you're in iTunes, take a moment and give us a rating.
That would be great.
Have a great week, everybody.